everyone, welcome back to Cincinnati Zoo Tales. I'm Jenna.
And I'm Mark. Thanks to everyone for tuning in for yet another episode. There's no guest today. It feels a little bit quiet in here. Yeah. It's just me and Jenna today.
Just us. We're going to tell you guys about a new animal in the Africa area. And Mark is our primary keeper over this animal and is a part of her hand-raising team. So you've just got the two of us today. Mm-hmm. We are going to tell you a little bit about our baby named Maisie. She is a lesser kudu. I know anyone who follows along with the zoo's website, or Facebook, I should say, and Instagram, probably has seen photos of her and knows a little bit about her and are anxiously awaiting to see her. So we'll get into that when we might be able to see her outside on our savanna habitat. But Mark, tell us a little bit about lesser kudu in general, and then we'll get into Maisie's story.
Yeah, so lesser kudu, they're an antelope species from eastern Africa. So we've got our big, wide-open savanna habitat out there. It's got a lot of bird species. It's considered a mixed species exhibit because there's multiple different species inhabiting the same space. So it's got a lot of birds, and then the kudu are antelope species out there. So I get a little insulted, I'm not going to lie, when you'll see some guests walk by and say, look, there's a deer out there. They're not deer. It's a common misconception, but they're not deer. They're a little bit different. So antelopes, they always keep their horns, whereas the males are going to shed their horns every spring or every before breeding season, and then they're going to grow right back. So,
Or antlers,
I should say. Yeah. Not horns. Deers are going to shed their antlers yearly, whereas antelope species are going to keep their horns all year long. So the only antelope species we have in North America are going to be pronghorn. So if you're out west and you've seen pronghorn, but lesser kudu are related to pronghorn in that they're in the same family. They're much more closely related to pronghorn than they are deer. But I'm getting on a side note. I'm getting on a tangent. I'm getting off topic here.
I could see, like, when we had impala, people thinking those were deer. They're more like fawn color.
Yeah.
But our lesser kudu, and they're lesser because they are smaller. There are also greater kudu, which are much larger.
Yes.
That's why they're called lesser kudu. But the males have, like, a blue hint.
Yeah.
Or, like, grayish. I don't know. Blue is the wrong, like, it's too strong of a word, but, like,
yeah, it's like a gray, almost like a purplish kind of tint to them. Yeah.
Yes.
And they've got these really pronounced stripes down their sides. So we have three adults. We have our male Hobbs, who, like you said, he's kind of got that almost grayish tint to him with his white stripes. He's got the really striking spiraled horns.
Yes.
So he's impossible to miss out there. He's handsome as can be. And then the females, they're much more brown in color as opposed to where Hobbs is the gray. So we have two females. We have Sabi and Fjorda. Sabi and Fjorda came to us almost exactly a year ago now.
Wow, I don't know why it feels longer. I can't. Maybe because we already have a baby.
Yeah, I know. So almost exactly a year ago now, they came to us last spring. So we got Sabi and Fjorda are mom and daughter. Fjorda is the mom. Sabi is the daughter. So if you're ever out on the savanna habitat and you're looking to tell the difference between the two of them, Fjorda is definitely a little bit larger in size than Sabi. Sabi's still a little bit smaller. But the easiest way to tell them apart is they used to live in a large herd setting. So in a herd setting, a lot of hoof stock are managed with ear tags. So Sabi has a black ear tag in her left ear, whereas Fjorda has a green ear tag in her left ear, which is going to be the easiest way to tell them apart when they're out in the savanna habitat. But yeah, they came to us about a year ago, and the plan was for them to breed and for us to increase the size of our kudu herd. They're on a breeding recommendation from the SSP, so Hobbs is a recommendation to breed with both of our new females. So it's hard to believe, but right at a year later, we've already got a baby from it.
So I think we mentioned Hobbs, or maybe we didn't mention, but Hobbs has been here since basically our department opened back in 2014. And I don't know if I should even put you on the spot because I don't know how old he is. Do you know how old he is? We asked this.
Yeah, he was born in 2013.
The
summer of 2013. He was August of 2013. So that puts him at
11.
Oh, he'll be 11 this summer. Yeah.
And do you know the ages of Sabi and Fjorda?
Oh, off the top of my head, I should know this. I want to say that Fjorda is 5, but don't quote me on that one. But Sabi, I know, is 2.
Okay.
Sabi's 2 years old. Yeah. Yeah, Sabi's the youngin. So lesser kudu are sexually mature at anywhere from 15 to 18 months. So Maisie was born from Sabi. So Sabi is Maisie's mom, and Sabi was pregnant basically as early as she could have gotten pregnant, right as she kind of came into sexual maturity. Her and Hobbs made it work out there in the Savannah, and she got pregnant really quickly after getting here. Yeah.
So it's about a 9-month gestation, right?
Yeah, it's about 7.5 to 8. So it's right on the line there.
I should definitely know that. Why did I think it was longer?
Yeah, 7.5 to 8, anywhere in that range. But they say there's been on record, there have been kudu births that have, or kudu gestation that have gone into 8.5 months.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Yeah, we kind of like, we knew when like the earliest could be, but also we knew it may not be like her due date. I mean, we were on watch for a baby for a long time, it felt like.
Yeah, so we had about a 6-week window, give or take, that we expected the baby in. We had seen plenty of breeding between Hobbs and Sabi, but, you know, we'd seen a lot of breeding, but that doesn't mean we knew exactly when it was going to happen. And then we were also going based off, you know, the earliest possible date that a kudu had given birth in North America versus the latest possible date a kudu had given birth in North America. So we had about a 6-week window there, but it did feel like a long time.
And she took us to the end of the window.
She took us to the end of the window, and it's one of those things, every morning you come in all excited, and you're keeping track of the cameras that we have, and they're holding areas in the barn, and you get so excited. You're like, it's got to be any day now. It's got to be any day, and it seemed like it drug out for a while.
Yes, definitely. So we used to have, you know, a couple male impala. We've had Thompson's gazelle in the past. We had a wildebeest, but this year we decided to focus on actually contributing to the species survival plan and breeding kudu. So that's why the girls were brought. Hobbs is on the older side. Mm-hmm. Typical age range is usually about 12 to 13 for males.
Yeah, anywhere from 12 to kind of 15. Yeah, okay. Right in that range. Mm-hmm.
So he is getting up there, and we're glad that he's made at least one baby so far, and we hope to have a few more in his time. But we are kind of focusing on lesser kudu as far as antelope species, and then a bunch of those birds like Mark mentioned. But because of that, the girls were brought here. Fjorda, I can let you tell us about their personalities, but Fjorda was a really good mom to Sabi.
Yes.
But you never really know what's going to happen with a first-time mom. Mm-hmm. And Sabi is one of the shyest, you know, animals in our savanna habitat. So we weren't sure how that would go. And I'll let you can tell us a little bit more about Hobbs, his personality, Fjorda, and then we'll get into Sabi, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. So Hobbs is very tractable. Like you said earlier, Hobbs has been here since 2014, basically since our Africa habitat opened up. And he's been very personable with keepers. He's a favorite among our keeper team. So he gets lots of attention. He really enjoys the interaction with keeper staff. And we're very hands-on with him. He's not spooked by us. He's not shy around us or anything like that. Which is honestly pretty unusual for an antelope species like that. You expect a prey species to be a little bit more flighty and a little bit more on edge. But Hobbs is very confident. There's not a care in the world.
He's too confident.
Sometimes he's too confident.
He's like pushy for snacks and treats and gets
snacks
in your way.
I always get amused by anyone who's visited our zoo. You know how the savanna habitat kind of overlooks the lion habitat. And there's a sight line where the lions can see into the savanna and the savanna animals can see into the lion yard. And you would think Hobbs, he's a prey species. Lions might go after a kudu in the wild. You would think Hobbs would be frightened by this. Not one bit. Hobbs sits at that overlook and will just stare at the lions.
He even lays down right there sometimes.
Yeah, he lays down right in front where the lions can see him. And you're like, oh man, he wouldn't last long if he were in the wild. But luckily he's here and he doesn't have to worry about any of that. But yeah, he's very confident, very tractable. So our girls came in, like I said, about a year ago. We weren't really too sure what to expect. They didn't have a whole lot of hands-on care at their old facility. So when they did get here, it was a lot of learning for us, their personalities, and them learning their new routine and their new habitat, what life was going to be like here. So it definitely was an adjustment period. Fjorda is definitely a little more confident than Sabi, the mom. Fjorda's the mom, once again. She's a little more confident than Sabi. She's a little bit more okay with our attention, and she's a little bit more tractable. Not to say she's nothing like Hobbs, where she wants to come up and eat out of your hand or anything like that. But she's getting better and better. We're trying to slowly desensitize her and slowly get her more used to interacting with us. And after a year, we have definitely seen some good progress.
Yeah, definitely. She'll approach for treats. She for might sure. stay like 3 or 4 feet back. Or even heard, hasn't she taken a treat from like through the fence yep. and that sort of thing? Yeah. So as long as there's a little bit of a barrier, she trusts us a little bit more.
Which is huge progress, because, you know, and with Hoofstock, all this stuff comes really slowly. But, you know, a year ago when they first came, understandably, it was a stressful event for them to move and everything, but they were definitely very frightened by us. Mm. They didn't want really anything to do with us. So after a year, for her to already be feeding through us, even if it's through a barrier, feeding by hand from us is a huge, huge step in the right direction. So Fjord is getting there. Sabi has definitely been a more challenging project. She was younger when this move happened. So in one respect, you might think, oh, well, it's easier for her to transition. But in another respect, it is a traumatizing event for a young animal mm-hmm. to go through for that move, even though we take every precaution we can to try and make things as little stress as possible. But just like when you would move houses for a human, it's always a big deal, you know? It's always a big event. So for Sabi, it's been a work in progress. We're slowly getting there. She hasn't made quite as much progress as Fjorda has, but she's definitely a little bit more frightened. She's definitely more aware of our presence, and she's always got tabs on everything. She's very vigilant, so she's watching, you know, if we're out on the savannah habitat with the animals, she's watching us and where we're at, and we're keeping an eye on her as well. But it's a work in progress for Sabi. For sure.
Yeah, it would be really helpful if she were to get more comfortable with us. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, all the things that we do with the animals, if they allow, with medical behaviors and such, like trimming hooves or giving medications. If they'll eat by hand, you know, you can give them a medicated piece of apple or whatnot and not have to separate them or worry if they actually consumed it. So it's not even just for fun. Like, it is helpful if we can get them really comfortable with us, or at least more comfortable yeah. with us.
So. Yeah, no, that's absolutely a great point to make. So, like, for Hobbs, for instance, obviously, selfishly, yes, it is really cool that we're able to hand feed him. That is very fun, but it's also very important. So that helps us with a couple of really important behaviors for his management. So like fly spray during the summertime. Flies get really bad in the Cincinnati area during summer, especially in the moist savanna habitat out there, you know. So we're able to apply fly spray for Hob so he gets less attention from flies. We're able to do hoof work for him to make sure his hoofs aren't being overgrown or anything like that. So ideally, that's our long-term goal, is for both of our females, for Sabi and Fjorda, for us to be able to do the same kind of care that we give to Hobbs, to be able to give to them. And it's definitely going to be a long-term project, but we're optimistic we can get there eventually.
Yeah. Good, good. I don't know how optimistic I am for Sabi, but I love your attitude.
Great things take time, yes. Jenna. We're going to get there. We're going to get there.
So we mentioned that she is rather young, but that they can start having babies very young. So yep. that's what happened. Mm-hmm. And so Sabi was a young first-time mom, and we now have baby Maisie with us. Mm-hmm. Tell us about baby Maisie. When was she born? What's going on with her?
A little angel. Oh my gosh. So Maisie was born on January 15th this year. So just a couple of months ago now. So like you mentioned, she was Sabi's calf. So we weren't exactly sure how Sabi was going to react, being a first-time mom, being a young mother at that. You know, in the wild, a lot of first-time moms don't have success with their first babies. It's very common for a first-time mom to lose their first baby. So we weren't really sure how she was going to do. And unfortunately, Sabi did not take great care of Maisie when she was born. So Maisie was born January 15th in the afternoon. We keeping really close tabs on everything. We have cameras set up in their stalls in our savannah barn. We're really hoping, fingers crossed, you know, hopefully Sabi's going to go take care of her. Hopefully she's going to start grooming her, and because, you know, she's born with all the amniotic fluid around her and everything. She's soaking wet. And of course, January 15th, Maisie had to be born on the coldest day
it
of
really
the year.
Was so cold.
It was, I think the high that day was like 5 degrees. And obviously the barn is heated, but on a day like that, it's just so cold that it's a little bit drafty. It's hard for the barn to stay at an appropriate warm temperature for a newborn calf, you know? Mm-hmm. So we were extra vigilant because of that, because we knew the temperature was so cold that day. But we were hoping Sabi would eventually go and groom her. Sabi was clearly very freaked out. She was confused. She didn't really know what was going on. She didn't understand it, which is, like we kind of said, to be expected for a first-time mom. We were hoping she would either A, kind of instincts would kick in and she would get over the hump herself, or what we were also hoping for was Fjorda, who her mom that was with her, who's a proven mom, we were kind of hoping Fjorda might show Sabi the ropes. Well, Fjorda kind of walked into the other stall and was like, no, Sabi, this is your baby. You got this. Take care of it. Sabi was very spooked and was just seemed very confused and disoriented, didn't really know what was going on. She was scared of the calf initially. Like, she ran into the corner and was just staring at it like it was, you know, an alien or something like that. So after about an hour, we made the decision, you know, this calf is soaking wet. The barn's a little chilly. We need to go clean this calf up, warm it up, and then return it back to Sabi. Hopefully at that point, Sabi's instincts will kick in. She'll take care of it. So that's what we did. We tried again, gave her back to Sabi after we cleaned her up and everything, and gave Sabi another couple hours. And unfortunately, it just wasn't going to happen. So we made the decision as a group between our vet staff, our animal leadership team, and our keepers. We kind of made the decision, you know, we've got to get some milk into her. We've got to start feeding her. We've got to make sure she's got some nourishment, some nutrition. So we decided to, at that point, start bottle feeding her. It didn't seem like Sabi's instincts were going to kick in. So there wasn't really much hope for her to nurse, for the baby to nurse from Sabi. Sabi was even like towards the tail end of it, like, because we tried reintroducing her again after we gave her an initial feeding. Sabi was like even a little bit aggressive towards the calf. Like, she was like kind of nipping at her. She was unsure if this was friend or foe, if this was a good thing or a bad thing. So
I wanted to bring that up in case anybody was wondering, like, what do you mean it wasn't going well? Or essentially, most antelope species, you know, they're standing within an hour of being born, and then within a couple of hours, you hope to see them seeking out milk. Usually it's much sooner than that. So thankfully, I mean, or props to Maisie, she did know what she was doing, and she was trying to
nurse.
She found her mom, she knew what to do, she knew where to go, and she really gave it her best effort, but Sabi was, like, avoiding her and then eventually nipping at her and just giving us all the signs that, like, this probably isn't going to happen for Maisie. Yeah. And there's always that delicate line of how much time do you give for baby and mom to, like, bond or allow for nursing, and also, like you mentioned, the nourishment and keeping the baby warm and all of those things to happen. So because of all the signs we saw with Sabi seemingly being afraid of her baby.
Yeah.
And again, once there was, like, I mean, we gave it time and saw enough of the, like, nipping and kind of trying to get Maisie to go away that it was obvious that, you know, we needed to step in.
Yeah, kind of like you said, it's a balancing act. Like, in an ideal world, what we really want is for Sabi to take care of this baby and for the baby to be raised by her mom. That's what's most natural. That's what these animals would be doing in the wild. That's our ideal scenario. Unfortunately, just because the way things worked out, like you said, we saw a lot of avoidance behaviors from Sabi. Maisie was walking, you know, in a normal timeline. Within an hour and a half or so, she's up and walking, and she was trying to follow Sabi, and Sabi could not get away quick enough. Every time Maisie would follow her into one stall, Sabi would go into the other. Maisie would follow her into that stall, Sabi would run away, and then eventually, after I think she was just getting annoyed with Maisie following her around, she started nipping at her, and we're like, okay, this clearly isn't going to work for Sabi. Her instincts aren't kicking in, so let's do what we need to do to make sure that the calf is healthy and has enough nourishment. Like I said, it also didn't help our cause that it's 5 degrees outside and there's cool air coming through the cracks and the crevices in the barn, you know.
So we did set Maisie up with her own stall and made sure that all of those cracks and crevices were filled in with, like, bales of straw.
Yep.
We set up a heat lamp for her to, like, lay under, which she did choose to lay under it, and did all the things that, you know, are a little bit different you wouldn't normally do if she just sort of stayed with her mom. But
correct.
And while Mark mentioned the goal was never for us to hand raise this baby. We would much rather her be reared by her mother. But because of that, we did have to make a bottle rearing team. And we have, you know, one of our neonate keepers, Dawn Strasser, and then Mark, Dara, and Teresa are all a part of her bottle feeding team. Mm-hmm. So they've grown really close with Maisie. And there are those special moments, like, again, it's not something that we hope for or planned for as far as, like, we're just going to bottle feed her. It just needed to happen for her health and her survival. But there are fun moments.
Yeah.
And because of that, Maisie is now very tractable.
Yes.
Like Hobbs. So tell us a little bit about what it's been like bottle feeding her and the things you're able to do because of the bond that you do have.
Yeah. So like you said, like selfishly, the bottle feeding has been a very special experience and just incredible, honestly. It's been a ton of fun. A lot of work, but a lot of fun. Just like your baby at home, like, I mean, she was getting fed almost around the clock for those first couple of weeks. So we were coming in at nights to feed her. We're coming in early in the mornings to feed her. Every 3 hours, basically, she was getting a bottle. So it was, a couple weeks there where you're not getting as much sleep, but it's definitely worth it. Some of those moments where you're just hanging out, like, I don't know, I would tell my family, I'd be like, oh man, I gotta leave family dinner, I gotta go feed Maisie. And it's like, well, life could be much worse than coming in to bottle feed a baby kudu, you know? Like, it was pretty incredible, for sure. So, just sharing those moments with her. And then, a awesome side advantage of it that we were kind of hoping for, but we've already seen the fruits of it bear out, is how much that's been able to desensitize Fjorda and Sabi. So it was very important to us that even though we are bottle feeding her and we are hand raising her, that she's still a kudu at the end of the day, mm-hmm. and that she still knows she's a kudu. She's interacting with the others. So essentially for the first 2 weeks, she was spending all of her time with Sabi and Fjorda. So she's still interacting with the adults. She's still hanging out with the girls, but then she was just getting separated out for those bottle feeding periods. So every 3 hours, we'd give her her bottle, and then she's back with the females. So she's interacting with the others like a normal kudu would. That was really important to us. So eventually, it got to the point where she was so comfortable with Sabi and Fjorda and Sabi were getting so comfortable with us bottle feeding because it was such a regular occurrence. They were seeing it so often that we stopped shutting the door between the two stalls. So at first, every time we'd bottle feed her, we'd shut that door and feed her on her own. Well, then it got to the point where we just leave that door open. Sabi and Fjorda would see us coming in every 3 hours to feed Maisie. And I think that's desensitized them over time to realize, oh, these people aren't going to harm us. They're just here. They're going to give some food and then they're going to be on their way. So we've already seen Sabi and Fjorda being much more comfortable with us. They'll approach us more frequently. They're more comfortable sharing space with us now. So that's been an awesome benefit along with everything that we've been able to do with Maisie.
Yeah, something,
you know?
Very unexpected, right? Like, yeah. That's not what you would think when a baby comes around, that the adult females would be more comfortable with people. But yeah, like Sabi will continue laying down when you enter the stall and not hop up, like, you know, ready to run if necessary.
Yeah.
And then you guys have also been touching Maisie's feet, mm-hmm. and desensitizing her to that in case she ever needs hoof care in the future. And then, to check up on a baby, we do blood draws. So you guys have been working on that and trying to get voluntary blood on Maisie, which by that we mean, like, she's not being restrained in any way. And you guys have been successful with that.
We have, yeah, we
That's
have.
That's really impressive.
Yeah, it's been amazing. That's, like you said, another huge benefit of the bottle feeding is we can start these behaviors while she's still so young and so, like, able to be kind of molded, so to speak. Like, she's picking up on these behaviors so quickly because she's learning so quickly. So one of the big ones, like you mentioned, is hoof care. Like, she's not at the point where we need to trim her hooves. Actually, you know, she's still a newborn.
They're teeny,
pretty much.
Tiny. They're too. So, like, how big would you describe them to everyone?
I mean, so they have,
like,
the two
top
toes.
Knuckle of your thumb?
Yeah, they have the two toes of their hooves, and each toe is maybe half a pinky. I don't know. She's got tiny little feet right now. Yeah, they're precious. So we're not at the point where we don't need to actually trim them, but just to train the behavior so that in the future, once she's older and we do need to trim them, it's possible. So we're picking up all four of her hooves while she's getting her bottle. She's being reinforced with her bottle, which she's loves her bottle. She can't get enough right now. So she's a growing girl. So while she's getting her bottle, we're picking up a hoof here or there. We're just tapping it with our hand, putting some pressure on it so she's used to what a trim might feel like in the future. We've already desensitized her to the fly spray, so we're not actually spraying her with fly spray. We've just got a bottle of water that we're just spraying with. So just so she's used to the sensation of what the liquid's going to feel like, the sound of the nozzle, you know, mm-hmm. when the spray is released. So she's getting used to all that stuff. And then the big one for us has been the voluntary blood draw, which has been amazing to see her be successful with. So that's all her choice. She can walk away and not take part in it if she wants to. And she's hanging around. She's sticking with her bottle while we were able to draw blood from her.
That's incredible.
For testing. So Yeah.
We gotta get that on video.
We do, yeah, we do. Next time we do it, we do need to get video of it, because she's fantastic for it, and she's so tolerant. She doesn't have, for better or for worse, she's got no fear in her right now, so she's definitely comfortable with us. She's comfortable when, like, you know, a vet tech who might be a quote-unquote stranger, when one of the vets or the vet techs pop in, doesn't seem to bother her at all. She's totally comfortable with new people, which is awesome. Knock on wood, it seems like it's kind of shaping up to be like a little bit of the best of both worlds. You know, she truly is a kudu. She interacts with the other kudu the way she's supposed to, but at the same time, she's also being able to be managed for these behaviors with fly spray, blood draw, all these medical behaviors that are very important to her care down the road. She's already participating in, she's already doing a great job with, and hopefully she's only going to get better and better with time, you know? She's been amazing.
Yeah. And she'll likely be really comfortable with humans for her whole life, which who will be around her whole life, so she'll be in a zoo.
Yeah.
You mentioned she was born January 15th. Mm-hmm. Tell us how much she weighed and how much she weighs now.
Yeah, so January 15th when she was born, she was almost exactly 12 pounds. So,
teeny tiny.
Yeah, I know, just a teeny tiny little baby.
She's so tall
now. She's not 12. She's just stretching out. She's like a rubber band. Like, it seems like she just keeps growing and stretching. So she's up to 35 pounds.
Wow.
Just under 35 pounds as of today.
I should know that, but I haven't.
This is what, March 17th?
Oh, yeah, so today is March
18th.
This episode might be about a month old when it comes out. But, yeah, so just 2 months old. And
2 months old.
Over doubled her weight.
Yeah, she's getting huge. And then, so I didn't mention it, but at first, you know, she was getting to spend time with the adult females in the wild. A female would go off and give birth on its own before coming back to be with the male and the other females that they're with. So we gave her about a 12 to 14 day period with just the two females before we introduced her to Hobbs, which is pretty similar to what would happen in the wild. So she was just over 2 weeks old when she was introduced to Hobbs inside in our barn, and Hobbs was amazing. Not that Hobbs is so gentle and chill in general. We weren't worried Hobbs would do anything, but we weren't quite sure how Maisie would react, if she'd be a little bit spooked by this, you know, larger animal. Hobbs is about twice the size and weight of the female, so he is a large animal. We weren't sure how Maisie would react. Hobbs has been a perfect gentleman. He's been so sweet and gentle with her. We'll see them groom each other.
So
Hobbs
cute.
Will groom her. And
he's been more loving
back.
And like paternal to her than Sabi has.
Yeah,
times
I
10.
I know, which you didn't expect. You would never expect that out of a male, you know, for hoofstock at least. But yeah.
He's been great. And we have seen a lot of improvement with Sabi being comfortable with Maisie. So Maisie's been
definitely
brave, and she was a little like jumpier, like she would kind of go around that. We had like a roundabout situation, so Hobbs would like kind of come to check her out, and she'd like stand there for a second, then kind of dart off, and then like come back around and like come behind him. But they're very comfortable. That was like maybe half a day, and she's completely normal or comfortable with him. But we see Sabi laying down and Maisie laying next to her, or all three females laying down together. It just seems like Sabi is realizing, or has realized for a while now, that Maisie is not an alien. She's just a baby kudu, and she's part of the group now. So.
Yeah, that's definitely important to mention. Like, those kind of, like, aggressive behaviors that we were initially seeing from Sabi, those aggressive behaviors subsided after just a couple of days, and we weren't seeing that anymore. And I'm not so sure if Sabi even sees Maisie as her offspring, if she knows it's her calf. But Sabi certainly at this point sees her as a member of the herd.
Yeah.
She's no longer scared of Maisie. They'll cohabitate. They'll lay together. They'll feed together. They'll eat out of the same alfalfa bowl together. So they're experiencing all the same behaviors that we would expect for two herd mates to experience. And like, Sabi definitely enjoys laying with her. Like, Maisie's still has in our barn, she's got a very comfily bedded stall. So Sabi, I think, likes the thick bedding in that stall. So Sabi will pretty frequently go over and lay with Maisie in that stall. And Fjorda's the same way. Fjorda never showed any sort of aggressive behavior towards Maisie, but they're all very comfortable with each other. Everyone's getting along perfectly. Knock on wood, it's been a very smooth process so far. And over time, Maisie's getting fewer and fewer bottles from us, and she's eating more and more solids. So at this point, We're seeing her eat a lot of alfalfa, the hay that the kudu receive. We're seeing her eat some of the browse that the adults get. She's kind of learning from the adults, like, oh, how do I rip the leaves from the stem? How do I eat all this stuff? It's been really fun watching her observe them. And we're just finally starting to see her eat a little bit of grain as well. So she's finally starting to pick up on all the solid foods that the adults are eating. And she's still being supplemented with the bottles. But as she's eating more and more solids, she's receiving fewer and fewer bottles. So
you guys are down to 3 bottles a day currently.
3 bottles a day now, yep.
And yeah, you mentioned she is trying the solids. And we didn't really go a ton into their natural history, but lesser kudu are typically browsers.
Yes.
So they would eat leaves off of bushes and trees and typically like hide more and be kind of in more like denser areas, right?
Yeah.
You wouldn't see them necessarily out on the open savanna.
They'd be more in a forest dwelling species. Yeah.
So you might notice them like kind of towards the back of the habitat when they are out in the summer. We've mentioned Hobbs is so friendly and he'll go out for a browse wherever we put them or follow us around, like hoping we have treats, even if we have like a bag of fish to feed the pelicans or something. So if you are ever here and looking for them, you can sometimes find them in the back, and because of their stripes, I think it helps with like shadows and like kind of looks like light filtering through the forest, that sort of thing. But yeah, so Maisie will eat alfalfa just like ours, which is basically what we give them in place of browse, but they do get fresh leaves and fresh browse every day. And we give them produce just to help with enrichment, but also in case we do need to medicate, like it's a special treat. And then they get what we call cookies or treats or biscuits, just special things that Maisie's not getting quite yet.
I'm sure she will love
if she's anything like her father.
Yes, yes. Hobbs, that's his favorite. He loves those biscuits. And it's great for us because we know those are really high-value items. So that's what we use when we do like the fly spray and the hoof care with him. But yeah, I'm very glad you mentioned that. I completely skipped over that earlier. There are forest-dwelling species in the wild. So while Hobbs, he's a bit of an anomaly, you'll see him hanging out in the open savanna all the time. But the girls, if you're visiting, you're typically going to find them in the tree, like the shaded area. So in the back of the habitat, we have a lot of trees along the back fence line that you'll see them. And then we have like those mulch planters in our habitat, which each of those mulch planters have a handful of trees. You'll see the girls hanging out and laying down in those planters a lot too. Anywhere where there's kind of some trees, some shade and some hiding for them. Those are typically the spots you're going to find the girls the most out there.
It'll be interesting to see where she decides to hang out.
Like, yeah, where Maisie goes. Yeah.
Hobbs are out in the middle because there are people and she'll want to get close to them, or if she'll hang out more with the females. But, I mean, people are going to want to see her. Mm-hmm. She's recently started spending a little bit of time when it's warm enough because we've had these weird days where one day it's 70 and today it's like 29 degrees.
Yeah.
But she's getting out in our holding yards. When can the public expect to see her outside? The best to, like, what you think so far?
Great question. So that's something that we're going over as a team right now. So there's a few obstacles in getting there. First is our kind of runway, which leads from our barn to our habitat, to the savanna habitat. So right now we're getting her used to that runway. We've got a kind of a connection of three or four yards that lead between the barn and the habitat. So she's getting used to that runway right now and those outdoor holding yards, which she loves spending time outside right now, stretching her legs and
so
running around
to
like
see
crazy.
Her run and jump and buck.
I know. So on those warm days, she does have access to the holding yard out there, which she's learning to navigate and she's getting used to pretty quickly. It helps having the adults kind of be able to show her the ropes and show her where to go out there. That's been very helpful. But we do have a couple hurdles on the habitat as well. Like we have the savanna moat. So we're going to have to kind of build a barrier around the moat up front where the water is. So we do have some barriers and some obstacles we're going to have to overcome. But it's all just a matter of time desensitizing her to all of it. So right now, you know, it's hard to say. We're kind of going at her pace, but we're hoping sometime in April for her to be outside on the savanna habitat. So hopefully a couple weeks into April, we have her out there.
And hopefully it's warm enough.
Yeah, I would say it's also going to depend on the weather right now, right? So she's not getting access outside anytime it's colder than 50 and sunny. So we do have to wait for the temperature to warm up and for those nicer days, which unfortunately right now, those nice days have been few and far between. But hopefully it's only warming up.
Yes, it's definitely been up and down a lot around here.
Mm.
Is there anything else we haven't talked about with Maisie or the kudu that you want to share?
No, nothing I can think of. I'm just excited for everyone to be able to see her out on habitat. She's got a lot of spunk. She's got a lot of charisma for a little bitty baby. But I think everyone in our department's completely in love with this girl. I think the public's going to go crazy for her, too, once they're finally able to see her outside. If you've been following some of the zoo's social media pages, I know we've posted some videos of her. And I'm telling you, it's impossible not to fall in love with this girl. She's perfect.
She is perfect. Well, I don't have any trivia for you today. I wish I would have come up with some. I should have.
Shucks. No chance for me to embarrass myself. Shucks.
Maybe I'll just plan it for next time.
Oh, man. But we do have a what can I do today, right?
Yeah.
If I want to be, let me ask you this. I never get to ask the question. Yeah. So what can I do? How can I be a better steward of the earth, a helper of wildlife and animals around the globe? What can I do, Jenna? Talk to me.
Thanks for asking, Mark. I would love to tell you. Something that we've touched on in sort of talking about spaying and neutering your pets and being a responsible pet owner. But something that's near and dear to my heart for the first time in my life is I have become a foster mom for a dog.
Yes.
And, you know, it started off with my husband and I have missed having dogs in our lives, but we also have a toddler and we're busy and we're out of town all the time. And it's just once you don't have dogs after having them for so long, you realize how much work they are. Didn't feel like it in the moment, but then when you don't have them, it's wow, I actually have a lot of extra time. Not extra time, but more time on my hands. And anyway, so we miss having dogs, but aren't ready for that full commitment. So I just would get caught up hours looking at the Cincinnati Animal Care website, looking at all the dogs. And I found out that you can do day trips. So you can foster a dog for literally one day. And it just gets them out of the shelter. You can take them to your house. You just can't introduce them to any pets of your own if you have them at your house. You can take them to get a hamburger from McDonald's, a bath, go to the park, anything basically where they aren't meeting other animals. And you get really good pictures of them. They can sleep all day because the shelter is a really stressful place. A lot of them aren't sleeping well. There's dogs barking all the time. But it also just helps the shelter get to know them because they aren't going to show their best selves at the shelter. So it's kind of a way to help the shelter market them and find the right home for them. So maybe you go out with a dog that loves to run and hike and you can help it find a home with a really active family. Or you find a couch potato and somebody who doesn't want to leave their house. They just want somebody to watch Netflix with them. That sort of thing. For us, we have a toddler, so finding the dogs that are good with kids is very important. But anyways, we started doing day fosters, day trips, and it's, a really rewarding process. And then in the meantime, we fell in love with a pup. His name is Puppy Cheese.
Puppy Cheese.
Yes, if he's still up for adoption by the time this comes out, go look him up on their website. He is amazing. He's great with our son. So the shelter is overflowing right now. They have over 500 dogs, and they have two different locations, and there just isn't enough space for all these dogs. Mm. So they're depending on fosters. Half of the dogs are actually already in foster. But they send an urgent text saying they need people to pick up medium, large-sized dogs. Well, that's what Puppy Cheese is. And we thought, well, we'll help for a few days, just get him out of the shelter for a few days. But it's been a little bit of up and down, do we want to do this longer? Do we want to find a foster takeover? Should we take him back to the shelter? And I think my husband's kind of falling for him and just keeps saying, well, we could keep him for a little bit longer, And then in the mornings when we're racing to work, it's like, we can't have a dog. We're running late. He needs to go to the bathroom. Somebody let him out. And then we're like, we should probably find a takeover. Anyways, it's been really, really fun. If you have any time in your life, even one Saturday a month or whatever, you can help a dog. So my what can I do? I feel like I just talked a lot and gave a really long answer. Is you can foster a dog, whether it be a day, an overnight foster. They need help so much that they aren't super strict about it. You don't have to commit to full term until they get adopted or that sort of thing. So you can change a dog's life, help the shelter out, and bring some fun into your life. I really recommend it. It's a lot of fun. And especially if you don't have young kids, I'm sure there's very little stress to it at all.
Yeah. And this is obviously, like you mentioned, many shelters are just overflowing. Yes. They need all the help they can get. These dogs need all the help, the love, the attention that they can get. Because a lot of times shelters are so understaffed, they just don't have the time to give the dogs some tender love and care that they really need. So I love that one. And I had never kind of realized that you can do day fosters. I always thought it was kind of a big, kind of longer term commitment. And if it's just a day, heck, I can take a dog out to a park for a day.
Yes, for sure. It's so fun. And it does depend on, like, certain rescue groups are very strict, and I get why.
Sure.
Things can go wrong. Things can, the wrong people could take these dogs. And so they, like, ask for certain commitments. But they do a background check and all these things at Cincinnati Animal Care, and they're just hoping to, you know, like I said, get these dogs out. Even someone who works with animals like me on a daily basis, and I understand like the stress levels these dogs are under and everything, going through the the back area to like look at the dogs, they are like, it does not make me want any of them because they are so just like stressed and not always in a great mindset, you know, barking and that sort of thing. So I imagine as people coming to adopt dogs, they're not going to see who the dog really is.
Yeah.
So this really helps. Like, they have proof now. I have all the videos, all the pictures I can show, and they can help like market the dogs better. So yeah, for a day, overnight, anything helps. And yeah, it's really good for the dogs. Like I said, sometimes they just want to sleep in a quiet home.
Yeah.
And it can take weeks for them to even like show their true selves, so
to adjust to a new setting fully,
or just like to recognize that they're safe. So we've definitely seen Puppy Cheese, he's a little bit more playful and wild now that he's been
good
with us. he's gotten all his energy back after a few good nights sleep in my bed. But
will you one more time just mention, if you're in the greater Cincinnati area, the resources you can go to kind of find this stuff?
If you just go to Cincinnati Animal Care's website. I actually didn't do any like research to look up the name of it. Let me see here. But it is CincinnatiAnimalCare.org. So if you check out CincinnatiAnimalCare.org, you can get a lot of information. You can look at all the dogs and cats available. You can sign up to foster. You can volunteer to walk dogs, all sorts of things. But I'd honestly love to have them come on our podcast so they can tell us more, too.
Definitely. And if you're listening to this, you're not in the Cincinnati area, I'm sure there's a shelter if you're, no matter where you are in the country, I'm sure there's a shelter somewhere near you that can use help with fostering.
Even if
feel
you just
free to
share
do some research
Facebook
or look out.
And say, like, you know, share their information of dogs that they're trying to get adopted is helpful.
Definitely. I love that one. Helping out a dog in need. All the dogs need our help.
Oh, sadly, there are so many.
Well,
thank you all for listening. I hope you have a wonderful day.
Yes. Can't wait for you guys to meet Maisie and see her out on the new Savannah habitat. So we're all crazy excited for that.
I can't wait to be out there with her. Make it extra fun.
Until next time, thanks to everyone for tuning in. Have a good one.
Thank you. Bye.